With a swig of water down, let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 6. I'm going to read verses 12 through 20. They're printed there in your bulletin. Hear the word of the Lord that says, "All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be dominated by anything. Food is meant for the stomach, and the stomach for food, and God will destroy both one and the other. The body is not meant for sexual immorality, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. And God raised the Lord and will also raise us up by his power. Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? Shall I then take the members of Christ and make them members of a prostitute? Never. Or do you not know that he who is joined to a prostitute becomes one body with her? For as it is written, the two will become one flesh. But he who is joined to the Lord becomes one spirit with him. Flee from sexual immorality. Every other sin a person commits is outside the body, but the sexually immoral person sins against his own body. Or do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? You're not your own, for you were bought with a price. So glorify God in your body." This is the word of the Lord. Well, on occasion, as we continue in our series in 1 Corinthians, by the way, before I start out, it's kind of funny. Sometimes I was talking to a friend of mine that was preaching on, he's also preaching through 1 Corinthians, and we got to one of these passages, and actually, I think it was the one last week on lawsuits. He goes, "What do you preach on next week?" I was like, "Well, I mean, it's chapter 6, so lawsuits." He goes, "Yeah, we're skipping that one." I'm glad we just trudge on through, because then I can't avoid anything. So anyway, on that note, 1 Corinthians 6, so on occasion, I read my notes here, my girls will find a piece of scrap wood. We've done a project or something over at the manse, and they'll find a piece of scrap wood out in the garage. And they'll say, "Hey, can we have this piece of scrap wood?" Because sometimes they like to do crafts or just for a diversion, hammer nails into pieces of wood. They find that enjoyable. But typically, I say, "I mean, it's fine with me because I don't really have any use for it. It's just a piece of scrap wood. I don't really care what it's used for because I'm not really going to do anything besides maybe stick it in the fire pit out back or throw it in the, you know, the dump stuff. So that's fine. Do whatever you want to with it. It really doesn't matter to me." Now keep that example in mind as we consider the next theological problem that's coming up in this letter to the church in Corinth. Now, as Paul's been going along, he's been dealing with addressing some quotes that they've had, some things that the church has said to him, in some sort of correspondence and letters before. So they've had questions that they've asked him, but he also interacts with some quotes that they have used. And we see some quotes in this text as well. In verse 12, one of the quotes that Paul will respond to, where it says, everything's lawful for me. That's something like the quote that's going on. The idea is that, listen, everything's lawful for me, so I can kind of do what I want, right? It's fine. And Paul responds here with a little, there's a play on words that's really, really hard to translate well. So he's basically saying, these words for rule and lawful all have to do with one root word for authority, or they're all related to this word for authority. And Paul's play on words is communicating, ironically, as he's done before, "Oh, you have authority over everything, but the problem is you're being authoritied by things that you think you're free to do." So his response to their quote is that, listen, you think everything's okay, but you're being ruled by some things that you think are okay. And then in verse 13, there's another quote, and there's some little exegetical conundrums in this text as far as translation goes. And the ESV interprets the quote. Remember, there's some, by the way, Greek doesn't have quotes, no finger quotes either, but they're not in the Greek text. So trying to understand which part is something that is they said, something they've said, and which is something that Paul is saying, sometimes is a little bit tricky. In verse 13, the English Standard Version that is quoted in your bulletin, it stops the quote right after "in the stomach for food." I think a good case can be made that the quote goes on to the end of that sentence so as to say, "Hey, listen, what difference does the body make? It's all gonna be destroyed anyway. It's just the body." And then it's also possible in verse 18, the ESV doesn't include quotes here. I think there's a good case to be made there for another quote, where what they're saying is every sin a person commits, that's sin is outside the body stuff. We're just talking about physical stuff. What's the big deal? We're free to do what we want because sin just has to do with spiritual things. The body doesn't matter. Now, even if we only stick with the quotes as included in the English Standard Version text, which is a completely plausible interpretation, by the way, I'm just a lowly MDiv student, and that's a whole committee of people, so it's a totally plausible interpretation. I think there's a case to be made for the way that I'm interpreting it here, but even if we only stick with the quotes as included in the ESV, we still come to the same conclusion. It's that the Corinthians were taking the view that the message of Jesus, this amazing gospel message that Paul has been preaching, it doesn't really have to do with this physical stuff. It's the spiritual stuff that matters. The physical stuff of the earth and the body, I mean, like, it's just no big deal. What's really spiritual, what's really like elite spirituality, has to do with things that aren't even connected. Now, to that sentiment, to this idea that the physical stuff of the world doesn't really matter, Paul says, are you kidding me? No way is that true. Not even a chance. You see, what we find here is that the church in Corinth had a very, very contemporary theological problem. In our day, the idea that the body doesn't really matter, that's still a problem. And it shows up in at least a couple different ways. There's a naturalistic version of this idea that the body doesn't matter. There's also a spiritualized version of the idea that the body doesn't really matter. Let's think about this contemporary theological problem for a minute. From a naturalistic angle, there is a naturalistic way to devalue the body. And it's seen in those places where when we center our reflection on ourself or start from ourself and scrub out our thoughts free of the world, the supernatural, the idea that there might be something beyond just our experience. And when that happens, we suffocate, I would argue, not I usually say I suggest, but I would argue that when we scrub free our view of the world, of all things supernatural, we stifle our imaginations. We fail to see the world as mysteriously and as beautifully as we could. You see, where things like scientific inquiry of the physical world, when that's done as an act of curious worship, what we see is our imaginations through something like scientific inquiry, something that's really centered on the stuff of earth. When we do that as an act of worship, of curious worship, what happens is our imaginations expand and our appreciation for the stuff of all creation and for the Creator who made all that stuff, it grows. We begin to see how incredible this place is and how amazing and how mysterious and how beautiful and how awe-inspiring it is. However, when we pursue looking at the physical stuff of the world, scrubbed free of anything beyond ourselves, we actually end in a sad display of futility. We might look around at the stuff of earth and say it's beautiful. We might look around and say it's incredibly complex. We might look around and say it fills me with awe. All possibilities to see the awe and the majesty of the physical world without ever including this notion that there might be something supernatural involved. But the problem is that even with all of that awe and sense of complexity, our part in the physical world, when it's approached just that way, scrubbed free of anything beyond ourselves, the problem is that it is an exercise in nihilism. The idea that life doesn't really have any meaning. It's an exercise in nihilism, no matter how courageous we might consider our nihilism. And at that point, it's actually the hedonist, the person that thinks that life's all about pleasure, they're actually on the right track if that's the case. Because why not? We might as well make this as pleasurable as possible for as long as we can. Although I would argue, by the way, that the hedonist is just a nihilist in a party hat. But you can think about that if you want to. In any case, the result is that people have to either live unaware of their either unaware of or in spite of their inconsistency, or they collapse in on themselves. Because all of a sudden, all the stuff around us, it doesn't really have any purpose or meaning to it. It's just kind of here, and I'm just kind of here, so what's the point? Collapse in on ourselves, trying to understand our place in what, in that view of things, is a very impersonal cosmos. But there's also a very spiritual version of saying that the body doesn't matter. Some people, both inside and outside of the church, try to understand personhood apart from the physical realities, the physical stuff of the world, including our bodies. And the church has fallen prey to this notion that it's really only the spiritual stuff that matters. I remember we sort of a bit of a seminary joke. You know, we're talking about theology and things like that, where, you know, we'd run across something that we didn't really want to mess with. Yeah, it's all going to burn up, no how. That's how we would say it. What difference does it make? Hey, it's all going to disappear at some point. We meant that as a joke because it's fundamentally untrue. It's a faulty anthropology that's often fed by a faulty eschatology. But outside of the church, there are also those that try to understand personhood apart from the body too. Personhood, some would say, is more rooted in that sort of non-physical, unidentifiable quality on which physical realities just impinge. Personhood's not really bound to the body. It's sort of something outside of the body, beyond the body. And I want to make this observation very carefully, because the brokenness of the fall reaches every part of our body. The brokenness of the fall seeps its way into everything down to DNA and whatever smaller than that. And there are people around us that are wrestling with painful disconnects between their internal vision of themselves in the world and the ever-swirling waters of cultural expectations, which are sometimes really, really strange, and the church often really makes it unhelpful. And people struggling with the way that all of those things, cultural expectations, their internal view of themselves, and the realities of the body that they live in. I want to make this observation carefully, and not tritely, because it would be a profound failure of love to say, hey, the body matters, and then treat people that are struggling with their body as though they don't matter. It'd be a profound lack of love. So I don't make this observation tritely. However, I do want to say that to try to understand ourselves without accounting for the physical realities of our bodies as a part of who we are, not just an add-on, to try to understand our bodies, or try to understand ourselves without accounting for the physical realities of our bodies is a misunderstanding of biblical anthropology. Now, making the observation here that there's a problem that the church in Corinth had, which was to say the body doesn't really matter. I believe it's a problem that we have in our culture, sometimes kind of a sneaky problem that we don't think about, but often we act as though, well, the body doesn't really matter. It's all this spiritual stuff. That's really what matters. I would suggest to you that it's a very serious problem. So Corinth had this very serious problem, and it's a problem that we're equally familiar with. They devalued the body. They thought it didn't matter. Well, what's the answer to this problem that the body doesn't matter? That's its own kind of little subtle play on words, by the way. But anyway, matter and never mind. Okay. What's the answer? Sometimes the plays on words are totally for my sake, so that's fine. Paul's answer was to say, that's not right. The body absolutely matters. The body matters because, in verses 13 and 19, the body belongs to Jesus. That body that you're saying doesn't matter, that's the Lord's. The body matters because the Spirit indwells the body. As some point out that the word here for body in verse 19 is singular, and the word for your is plural, so they would suggest that Paul's talking about the church as a whole when he says the Spirit, you know, indwells your body, so you glorify with your body. That's true exegetically. But it doesn't diminish Paul's point. Paul's point here is that we are individual bodies united together as a cultural, as one corporate organism, presenting the world with a picture of Christ. Our bodies, our physical bodies that are feeling sticky from the humidity up here. You've got to play a bass guitar with sticky fingers. These bodies are part of how God has designed a picture to the world. What is Jesus like? The body matters. Our individual bodies and the physical stuff of them matters. And that's why sexual practice is Paul's illustration. He's making the point that our bodies do matter. God has designed the act of sex to be a powerful picture of who He is. We wouldn't often think about sex that way. But God has designed the very act of sex to be a picture, a powerful picture of who God is. Sex is designed by God to demonstrate that unity with distinction that is a part of God's very existence, his Trinitarian existence. Unity, but not the same. Sex pictures the humility, the awkwardness, the vulnerability, the covenantal commitment that's required to even be near the holiness of a God like ours. The very act of sex is picturing these things. That's how it's designed. Song of Songs, chapter 8, verse 6 says that love flashes with the very flame of Yahweh. It's in the very same place where Song of Songs is saying, don't awaken love before it's time, because look how powerful it is. It flashes with the very flames of Yahweh. God has made sex as one way, though not the only way, to physically demonstrate, to embody God's powerful love. Sex is a uniquely embodied pointer to something that's way beyond it. It's way beyond the act of sex. It's pointing to something beyond itself to say, there's something bigger that you're barely touching on. That's a part of what sex is for. I mean, look at the kind of theological imagery that's tied up or bound up in even the very normal act of sex. I've said that word a lot so far, and my kids are going to rib me later. Listen, the kind of imagery that's bound up to this act is profound. We read earlier that at the end of the story, there's this whole bridegroom and husband imagery. We may see these things as very, very separate, a wedding and sex. In the ancient Near East and in the first century, they were much closer together. Who would have thought that that imagery of Christ and his bride should call forth from us an idea that sex points to something beyond itself, something bigger? It's an amazing illustration for what Paul is trying to say. Sex shows us that our bodies and the physical stuff of the world really, really matters. Imagine the theological import of sex. So how we view sex says a lot about what we think of Jesus. You know what that means, though? That means to prudishly run from talking about sex is actually a way to devalue it. But it also means that to carelessly throw sex around in our words and in our actions is another way to devalue it. God has hitched an incredible theological wagon to this act. And he calls us to do something beyond treat it without value. The body matters. The body belongs to Jesus. To try to make a point, as the Corinthians were doing, that it doesn't matter is to devalue this thing that is so incredible. So what are we supposed to do with that, though? So what I'm saying here, I mean, the big point so far is that the body, the physical stuff of life, matters. And Paul's pointer to sex is a big, shining, powerful illustration that the body matters to God. That's why he's tied so much theological weight to it. So what do we do? Well, Paul answers the question with a couple of imperatives in our text. We see one of them in verse 18 where he says, flee from sexual immorality. Run from it. Get away from it. Don't tease it. Don't soft sell it. Don't try to find cosmopolitan ways to justify it. Run away from sexual immorality. He also says that since our bodies belong to Jesus, the other imperative is that the right response is, so run away from sexual immorality. So run away from ways that devalue God's care for the body, and instead glorify God in your body. Actively glorify God in the physical stuff of your body. Well, how do we do that? I want to offer a couple of how suggestions to us this morning. A way forward for us to value the body. And for starters, I'd like to suggest to you that we need to learn how to value our own bodies. What you do with your body actually expresses your theology. Did you think about that when you got up this morning? What I do with my physical body expresses my theology. Well, it does. What does the way you approach your body say about your view of God? I think it might be helpful for some of you to stand in front of the mirror when you get home. Stand there and take a good look at yourself. And then remind yourself with these words as you stand there looking at yourself in the mirror and say, that body belongs to Jesus. That body, the one that I'm looking at, like you guys are here this morning, those bodies right there, those fannies and those seats belong to Jesus. The actual physical body, right? It matters. Do you treat your body like it belongs to Jesus? Some of you may be abusing your bodies and in so doing, mismanaging something that's really important to the Lord. Your body matters to Him. And what you do with it and what you do to it matters to Him. Some of you might be worshiping your body in place of the Lord of all creation. Some of your views of your body, if you do take up my counsel and stand there in front of the mirror, some of you are going to have a hard time with that because your views of your body are profoundly affected by things that people have said to you or done to you. And if that's you this morning, I want to tell you that whatever has been said or done to you, you stand in front of that mirror and see yourself. That body matters to Jesus. Not some sort of disconnected idea of you, but that body matters to Jesus. That body that you'll see in the mirror, Christ has promised to redeem. That body that you'll see in the mirror, Jesus has said, I have loved you, you in that body with an everlasting love. I've even housed my spirit in it, he says. That body, the one that you'll see in the mirror, the Spirit of God indwells that body if you belong to Christ. See, your body matters to Jesus. So what if we believe this? What if we really took this idea on that the body matters to Jesus? I think it would change some of the ways we approach what we do with our bodies. It might change some of the things we pile into them. It might change the way we approach work and exercise and health and health care. And certainly it would change how we approach issues of sexual behavior, because what we do with our bodies in all of those ways matters to Jesus. Because the body matters to Jesus. That body belongs to Christ. But similarly though, that's a lot of syllables. Similarly though, we need to learn how to value not only our own bodies, we need to learn how to value the bodies of others. How we view other people's bodies expresses our theology, doesn't it? How I view you, or how I view the person that walks by me at the gym, or how I view the person that waltzes by me on the bike path, how I view that person's physical body expresses my theology. And I think it would be helpful for us to remember that when we see other people, we also need to say, that body belongs to Jesus. This can pop up in several different ways. I mean, have you ever looked at somebody else's body with mockery? Well, that body belongs to Jesus. That person that you saw that maybe looks different from you and you might have some witty comments to say, that body belongs to Jesus. What do you have to say? How we view other people, the way we respond to the forms of others matters to Jesus, because that body, that other person's physical body, matters. And further, I should go ahead and tell you, I don't automatically assume, having read this text, that I'm looking at a bunch of people that were visiting prostitutes. You might be comforted by that. I don't assume that that's most people, hopefully nobody here. But I know people well enough to know that there are lots of ways we can devalue other people's bodies without ever quite doing that. Sexual sin and all of its expressions is so tempting because it's a twisting of something so powerful, something so amazing. Sexual sin in all the forms it pops up in, it's a twist on love. It's a good thing, love, that's being shaped into something that is not what it was designed for. And I'm talking about sexual sin in all of its forms. It's a mercenary objectification of someone who's made in God's image. Whether in a sinful physical encounter or in the lusts that bounce around in our hearts and minds. We need to remember that that body that we're lusting after or misusing for the sake of our desires, that body belongs to Jesus. It's more than just an aside when theologian N.T. Wright, he often has some fun cultural commentary. He said, I'm just going to read it to you. I don't like to just read you big quotes, but I don't have a better way to say this. I'm going to tell you what he said. He comments on this morning's passage saying, there are, of course, plenty of books, movies, and so on, which are produced solely with the aim of sexual arousal and with the aim of making money. This is a kind of prostitution, one removed. That hurts, doesn't it? I'm not so naive as to think that the blight of something like pornography hasn't reached this congregation that I love so much. And if that's you, if you're being burned right now by love that has been twisted, my goal is not to shame you. My goal is not to say, porn's a problem and it's you. That's not my point. What I'm trying to say is that, listen, there's a way out of the shame and shadows. If you're a person that is finding yourself not valuing the bodies of others and the lusts of your heart and mind, I say this not to shame you, but to call you out to live in the glories that God has made you for, and to call you out to live in the glories that God has made others for. You see, that body that you're looking at on the screen or in the book, if people use magazines anymore, that body belongs to Jesus, not to you. I want to call you out of the shadows of fear and shame to live into the glories of Christ, even in your body and in relation to others. I'm calling you to learn how to value the body of others by seeing them as belonging to Jesus and not as just an object for your desires. Not just an object for your personal use. That body belongs to Jesus. Now to learn that, to learn how to value the bodies of others, to stop just leapfrogging over recognizing beauty and heading straight for lust, that takes repentance. And it also takes learning some habits, the hard work of having our habits shaped. But listen, Jesus cares about the body. There's no way around that. He cares about the body, and He is invested by His Spirit in seeing you. Even if that is your problem and you hate it with all your guts, Jesus is invested in seeing you come to know the value of the body. So if that's you, I'd be happy to visit with you about it. I don't have magical answers to everything, but see, the problem with devaluing the body ends up being a problem with devaluing Jesus. How we view ourselves and all the twisted ways that we approach our own body, as well as learning how to value other people and dealing with all the twisted ways we approach other people's bodies. They all are rooted in what we think of Jesus. See, I believe we're called to value the body, and to value the body requires a high view of Christ, a high view of His rule, a high view of His reign that reaches past the weird, disconnected view of what's spiritual and what's not. When we get to 1 Corinthians 15, by the way, we're going to come to realize that our view of what is spiritual is really, really wonky. Because Christ made us with a body, and the body matters to Him. This body of mine, that body of yours, is not a spare scrap that is of little use or little concern to Christ. The goal of Jesus is not just to get you to heaven and finally get rid of that nasty body. He's going to redeem the stuff of this place, including that body that is sitting there in those chairs. That body belongs to Jesus, and He values it, and He has designs for it. And they're designs that picture His love, and they're designed to experience His love. He values the body so highly that He took on a body in His own incarnation. Jesus eternally took on a body. Jesus values the body so much that it was part of the cost He was also willing to lay down for the salvation of a very physical creation. Jesus eternally took on a body, and He was willing to see it destroyed for the sake of our sin. Jesus values the body so much that He tied His body to a very physical sacrament, so that we won't forget that Jesus values the body. And I think that's why I want to just skip right over to the Lord's table this morning to say, if we're going to learn how to value the body, we've got to learn to value Jesus. So week after week, we come around this table, and in a very physical way, we come to experience the grace and mercy of Jesus through this exercise at the Lord's Supper, where we remember that on the night that He was betrayed, He took bread, And giving thanks, he broke it and said, "This is my body, which is broken for you." And likewise, after the supper, he took the cup, and lifting it up, he said, "This cup is the new covenant poured out in my blood, the physical stuff of life, poured out for the many for forgiveness of sin. For as often as you eat this bread and you drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes." So Jesus cares about the body, your body, my body. And his design is to redeem it and to get us back to the point where we value it like he does. So this morning we're going to participate in this very physical sacrament. And if you're here today and you're a baptized follower of Jesus, you're welcome to come and join us at the table. That's the bar. You don't have to be a member of Lake Trails Presbyterian Church. You need to be a part of Jesus' physical body, received into the church. So if you're a baptized follower of Jesus, you're welcome to come this morning. We'll have elders to serve you at either of these column aisles. There's a gluten-free portion up here. If you want to participate and you're not physically able to come forward, wave at me, I'll come to you. But we want you, follower of Jesus, baptized follower of Jesus, let's physically remember that the redeeming work of Christ extends to the body. If you're here this morning and you're not a baptized follower of Jesus, I'm really thankful that you're here. It's kind of a weird sermon to waltz in on, I guess, to hear us talking about the body. I hope that you've heard something in there that maybe raises some questions for you. I'd be glad to talk to you about it. So just holler at me over whatever potluck food we have that comes out of the woodwork. But I'm glad that you're here. And even though you don't participate in this part of our service, I'd love to talk to you about who Jesus is and how we might welcome you. We say often that the way to the Lord's table is through baptism. There is lots of room at the Lord's table. I'd love to welcome you here. But for those of you that are going to participate, musicians want to come on forward. Sorry, I forgot all about that. If you want to come forward, I'm going to pray. Then we'll lift up our hearts to the Lord. All right, let me pray. Father in heaven, thank you for an amazing creation, a creation that we're a part of. Lord, in that way, people don't stand over creation. We're created to physical beings. Lord, thank you for the wonders of what you've made. And Jesus, thank you that you eternally took on a body so that you might save this physical place. And Holy Spirit, thank you that you indwell the body, that we might know the love of Christ, that we might grow in holiness, that we might become more and more the people you've called us to be. I pray that this morning, even in this sacrament, that it would provide strength to our bodies, that we might live for Christ. So Lord, the Eucharist is a giving of thanks, so I give you thanks this morning in Jesus' name. Amen.